Nothing.
Yeah.
We're live.
I just hope you didn't like wait around for us and then we were there.
Oh, we cleaned all day. We prepared a 3-course meal.
The house did look really nice.
We actually did vacuum, but it was more of a, you know what? We really need to vacuum. This is a good opportunity.
Yeah, that was a good time.
But we didn't spend a lot of time.
Okay.
All right, we are live.
What's all that noise?
I think it might be coming from Amy. She said she was going to mute, but I think she muted us, not her.
Ah.
This sounds like office noise.
That makes sense. Lots of exciting things happening at work today.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. There's a lot going on. Such things.
So things. Very big.
So very big. Such things. Such to do.
All devices welcome. Okay. iOS.
My
Android.
Cart is not empty.
Oh! So I have the prices he rolled out.
Yeah, we knew those already, though. You can go ahead and put them in there. It's better. It's good to have them. We didn't know all the tiers.
What is that noise I hear?
I think that's Amy's office noise.
Okay.
Apple TV, Fire TV, Chromecast, Roku. Yeah, that's all. As expected. Apple TV included. We knew that. 3-month prepay. They announced that last week. Fire TV stick.
I swear to God, if this thing got sold out. Oh, good. Sweet.
Give me a date. For goodness sake.
Ryan's going to be mad that I'm buying a blue jacket.
A blue jacket?
He doesn't like navy.
Oh.
I love navy.
La Echo is including a year of DirecTV Now if you buy their TV. That's new. That's interesting.
Are you listening to the announcement?
I'm watching it. Roger's listening to it.
Ah, okay.
I'm sorry. I'll turn off my mic.
No, you're fine. No, I was just curious. Yeah.
She was asking me if I was listening to it.
You're all good. Roger, did you have a nice birthday?
Normal day. Mostly normal packing. Day. Packing, babysitting. Someone said I had to stop calling it babysitting and call it parenting. But at this stage, it's really the one and the same.
Because it's your baby. It makes a difference.
Babysitting until I can pawn her off on her mother or my parents.
There you go.
We did buy a sleeper sofa over the weekend.
Ooh.
So we can accommodate my parents or whoever when they show up.
Yeah.
It's a really big living room now that I see it because my dad's giving me his Oriental rug that they bought back in 86.
The Verge just published their NDA thing, which gives us all the information that they haven't got to yet.
Oh, great. I don't have to listen to this guy.
Yep. Here, I'm putting it in the doc. There it is.
Oh, what a bunch of, yeah, whatever.
November 30th, 100 channels. The HBO and Cinemax being added for $5. Zero rated for wireless. We knew that. Interesting. Very interesting. All right.
Interesting is that CBS and Showtime, they're still working on agreements with.
Yeah.
Are you going home for the holidays, Veronica? By home, I mean your mother. No. Is your mother still Or didn't she move, or was she in the process of moving or something?
Yeah, she moved. She's still in the same town.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to see her when I go to the Women's March in January.
Oh, nice. Are you guys going to march together?
We are, yes.
Cool.
Yeah, staying at my aunt's place in near Washington. Should be good. I just bought a down parka because I don't have a jacket that's going to be suitable for January.
It's rough. When Jen moved out here, she ditched all her cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
So every time she had gear, so when she went back, like 8 years ago, she had to run out to the mall to buy a thick coat because it was so cold.
All right, Amy, are you unmuted?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Sorry.
No problem. Have you met Veronica before? Veronica Belmont?
Yeah. I feel like, no, but I feel like we should have at some point.
Internet ladies, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's start video. Thank you, The Verge, for giving the DirecTV details early.
Makes it easy.
Yeah, it does. All right. And TechCrunch is hot on their heels now. Everybody's publishing. Okay. Cool. Well, I think everything's working. Amy, do you have any questions before we get rolling?
I don't think so. I've got the rundown pulled up.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if there's anything in particular you want to weigh in on, just jump in after we read the item. I may throw you a question. I won't presume you're an expert on all the top stories of the day necessarily, but just opinion question type stuff.
Okay.
And I think we're good. V, you ready?
I am.
Roger, you ready?
Yes. Oh, wait. Do I have control?
I gave it to you. You should have it. Double check.
Let's see. Cool. I will hide.
All right. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, November 28th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me as she does Mondays, Ms. Veronica Belmont, co-host of Sword and Laser and product manager at Grobot. How are you, Veronica?
I am excellent. How are you today?
I'm good, because we're going to find out all about the future. I'm very happy to have Amy Webb, founder of the Future Today Institute, joining us. How's it going, Amy?
Going well. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Amy's got a new book out on how to predict tech trends. Now, you're not pretending to be psychic. You're not saying how to tell exactly what's going to happen. It's more useful than that. It's to me, it sounds like you're saying, hey, here's how to get a handle on what might be coming down the road next.
That's right. There is no answer to what's the future, for a lot of reasons, all of which are scientific. So rather than seeking out the answer, the next best thing we can all do is to seek out what we know to be true today and how to forecast what's coming next. And so that's what the book is about and how to do it.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a little bit. We got some news to get to. Facebook Express Wi-Fi has launched in India, allowing businesses to share Wi-Fi with the public for a fee. So the idea is that more entrepreneurs could put up small Wi-Fi things in restaurants, places like that, and expand access where there isn't mobile coverage or Wi-Fi coverage. Sling TV announced a beta version of a cloud DVR for its internet TV service that'll arrive in December, and did it very intentionally on the same day that AT&T announced more details about its internet TV service called DirecTV Now. It will offer up to 2 streams, no premium sports, $35 a month for the base package on up to $70. They've got 4 tiers, and it is arriving on November 30th. And now, here are some more top stories. CNN announced Monday that it has acquired Beam. That's spelled B-E-M-E. It's a short video app from YouTube creator Casey Neistat. Beam will shut down and Neistat will create a new project as a separate company under CNN. He announced the end of his daily video blog last week, so now we know why. Veronica, it's getting a lot of pickup from people because it's a major news organization essentially buying a YouTube creator.
Yeah, I mean, there. It seems more like a talent acquisition than probably anything else. He's a huge name for a lot of people, so I think it'll draw a lot of younger viewers into the CNN fold.
Have you seen Beam? I was not familiar with it, but the idea is it's kind of like a Snapchat sort of video messaging sharing service, but you only can use it by covering the proximity sensor. The idea being, you still look at reality without looking through the phone at reality. So you would like hold it up to your chest and then it would start recording.
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
I had a hard time. I downloaded it when it came out and I also thought it was pronounced BEM.
Thought it was Be Me.
Oh, that makes more sense. I found it to be, cumbersome, but I agree with Veronica. I think it's a talent acquisition. CNN Digital's on a hiring spree, so.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to shut down Beam, so they obviously didn't want to keep that as a product. They might use some of that technology, who knows, but absolutely, they're going to have Casey creating videos for them, creating content for them, and doing it as a separate company, which CNN also has a BuzzFeed competitor that they have been doing the same thing with. So another approach to saying, we're not going to try to sell CNN to a certain audience. We're going to find a person who already reaches that audience and take advantage of that.
Wait, they have a BuzzFeed competitor?
Yeah, I was not aware of this until I saw it in the Verge article about this.
Are we just like really behind, or is there just a lot of stuff happening that's not getting a lot of traction these days? I can't, maybe Amy can fill us in on why we're behind on all the tech trends as well as not being able to predict them, apparently. But moving on, Consumer Intelligence Research Partners estimates Amazon has sold 5.1 million Amazon Echo speakers since its debut to Prime subscribers in fall 2014. The Echo was made generally available in June 2015, and CIRP estimates 2 million units were sold in the first 9 months of 2016. The Echo Dot and Echo Tap accounted for at least a third of the sales in the past 6 months. Customers use it mostly as an audio speaker, with about a third using it for information and just more than 10% using it to control connected devices. Wow, 10% seems low. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, it does feel like most people use it for connected devices, but I'll be honest, I have it hooked up to a few, but I don't take advantage of that very often. I mostly use it for information, for shopping lists and stuff like that. And I feel like maybe, Amy, this is an example of the kind of thing you're talking about, where a trend shows up unexpectedly that took some people by surprise.
Well, I mean, yes and no. The trend is not that. There are two trends that are in play. One is a conversational interface. And so, we can essentially be expected to speak to our machines for the rest of our lives. This is just the beginning of that. The other one is the sort of smart virtual personal assistant. I would be curious to look at their data and to see what kinds of people are using these devices and in what ways. And is the Echo Dot being used differently than Alexa versus whatever the Alexa Junior version is? I forget the name of it.
Yeah, the Tap. Yeah.
The Tap, yeah. Yeah. So for me, this makes a lot of sense, actually, because we liked the convenience of having these kind of portable connected speaker systems, things like the Libratone or Sonos systems. But then when you add the conversational element as a layer on top of that, it makes it even easier to use. You can actually talk to your speaker and tell it what you want to listen to, which is nice as opposed to having to use an iPhone app, for example. Connected devices just aren't huge in the mainstream yet, I think, still. Like being able to connect your Alexa, your Echo rather, with your Nest system or your Wemo switches or your August lock. These are all great things and really great functionality, but not a ton of people have all of those things yet.
Yeah. Although what the story is pointing out is, the sales have been strong. Amazon has got a lead, even if it's small now. If the trend continues, so to speak, this would put them in front of the pack. You don't always stay in front of the pack just because you're in front at the beginning, of course. And I think what I find interesting about it is we all thought voice interface was going to be in your phone. And it is in your phone. I'm not saying that it's not. But I remember when Amazon introduced the Echo to the Prime subscribers, a lot of people said, why would you ever want that? And I think it's still, the jury's out as to exactly why you would want it. But more people found uses for it than it expected. Attackers infected a quarter of systems involved in the running of the San Francisco Municipal Transportation System, the light rail system, Muni, last week. Terminals displayed the message, "You hacked all data encrypted on their screens. Muni shut down all fare systems, allowing customers to ride free Friday evening and all day Saturday. Backups were not affected, though. Some data may have been lost for those couple of days, but they were able to restore the fare system Sunday, and service itself was never disrupted. The attackers told Motherboard today they will release 30 gigabytes of data stolen from Muni unless they receive a payment. Motherboard did not receive proof the attacking group has stolen the data. A lot of times, if there's a ransomware situation where they are threatening to release data, they'll give a little bit of it to a press outlet so they can confirm that, and they're not giving that to Motherboard.
Yeah, this is kind of funny because I was reading this article and they were saying how they didn't target Muni specifically. They were using software that looks for unprotected networks and kind of grabs onto them and works from there. So it seems a little dubious that maybe they do have a lot of what they say they have, because it seems kind of accidental in the first place, maybe. But it didn't seem to really affect things. People were happy they got free rides, and everyone's kind of moved on. I don't know what kind of data they think they have, unless it's credit card data, but that would be very easy to prove pretty quickly.
Or Clipper card
account Clipper card data. Yeah, addresses.
Although apparently the Clipper card system is run by a third party, which is not doesn't store its data in the system that was affected here. It's the processing system. So that would limit the amount of data that was actually stored. Possibly they got into the email system and have Muni employee information, something like that.
I like the idea that the MTA is just like, okay, cool. You have some data.
Yeah, we have a backup.
We don't care. We don't need that.
Lost Saturday rider data. It's going to affect some projections.
My favorite part of the story is the ransom that they were actually asking. It was 100 Bitcoin, which I don't think they even realized what it was that they were, if they got any data, like what they were sitting on.
100 Bitcoin.
Which is like 77, I mean, depending on like the volatility of the market, it's somewhere between $50,000 and $77,000. But
you know,
that's not a ton of money for a ransom kind of thing. That's like, yeah, totally. It's like, okay.
I think it's like accidentally hacked into the system, and we're like, oh, we didn't expect this to happen.
Yeah.
Please give us an arbitrary amount of Bitcoin.
Thank you.
Don't bake your ransom amount into the software.
The Wall Street Journal says suppliers say Apple have asked them to, quote, increase output of thinner organic light-emitting displays and submit prototype screens with better resolution than ones from Samsung. Weirdly specific. Such screens could be used for a curved display. Apple usually works on several prototypes at once, so this may or may not end up as a final design.
Samsung being one of the suppliers of screens to Apple, not better than the Galaxy S7 in this particular case.
That's how it
but
reads.
It does, yeah. No, it
that's
comes off as like, yeah, screw that Galaxy S7. You know, these kinds of stories are interesting because we always want to know what the next Apple product's going to be, but they're not definitive because I believe that the Wall Street Journal suppliers or the suppliers are telling the Wall Street Journal the truth, that they've been asked to play around with this. That doesn't mean it's going to work. Doesn't mean Apple's decided on it. It just means that, hey, we could get a curved display, and that curved display may just go around the edges. It's not like the phone's going to be banana shaped necessarily.
Hey, you know what? I apologize to our listeners out there. I said the A word, and this is something that people have complained about in the past. I turned on people's echoes. I apologize.
Thank you, Veronica.
Time this has happened.
Yeah.
So I apologize. I promise I won't start ordering expensive things for you via
with your Amazon Echo. Amy, I'm actually curious. How much stock do you put in these Apple rumors? I put low stock in them. I always kind of keep my expectations low until announcement day.
You know, I'm waiting for Apple to do something. Making these incremental changes that really just infuriate its original fan base. I'm on the side of like, listen, I live in the world of change, but this headphone saga, is just indicative of a company that hasn't quite figured out where it's going. Especially when, you know, one of the really interesting things is that as we were creating our annual report for next year that looks ahead to all the trends you need to know, I realized, we were almost all the way through and Apple really hadn't made a showing. And that's the first year in, I think, 10 years that that's ever happened. So,
yeah, it's been a while since they had a legitimately new product line that they didn't immediately discount as a hobby.
I mean, yeah, you know, and I don't, you know, the thing with the Beats and the subscription service, you know, there's a rumor of an Apple Car, you know, there's some other things in the works, but I don't think of Google as setting the pace when it comes to artificial intelligence and, you know, neural networks and the cloud and cognitive computing and conversational interfaces, you know, let alone hardware.
Yeah. Scientists at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Laboratory, though, do set the pace for artificial intelligence research because it's what they do. They developed a deep learning algorithm to create video simulating the future of a still image. So that it takes a still image and then says, well, this is what would happen next if we were to create a video based on that image. The algorithm viewed 2 million videos as training. One neural network was trained to generate the 1 to 2 second based video based on the still. Another network was trained to recognize fakes. And then they use what's called adversarial learning. Over time, the generator learned to fool the other neural network. So the one designed to check fakes couldn't spot the fakes anymore. Human subjects were brought in then to take a look. They deemed generated videos realistic 20% more often than baseline. Research could add animation to things, could detect anomalies in security footage, or even be used for data compressing for storage.
Oh, I want to see some of these. Interesting.
CCell has actually done some, so they've done this with photos, they've done it with videos, and they've also done it with sound. So they've trained a neural net to, they like tapped a drumstick on a bunch of different surfaces, and the computer systems were able to figure out and predict what that sound was going to be better than humans.
Wow. Yeah.
Computers are smart.
But this adversarial image thing is a potential problem because you have to sort of train machines. You have to show them the wrong thing in order to get them to always recognize the right thing. But that same exact system could be played around with, and, you know, you could automatically swap out all images with an Apple logo, for example, with a, I don't know, some other logo or whatever.
Yeah. And then train it that that's the wrong thing,
right,
even though it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
This is a cool building block towards something very interesting, and I don't know what it is, whether it's a computer generated story there. I mean, there's so many other pieces that would have to come into place for that, but the idea that we can just take a picture of the beach and have it be a 1 to 2 second loop of the tide going in and out sounds calming to me. Maybe just because it's the beach, I don't know.
Or you could just watch a video of the beach.
Yeah, but what if I have that perfect picture and then I didn't,
Life's not perfect, Tom. No. You have to accept the, never mind, whatever.
That's Instagram thinking again, isn't it? I'm sorry. I got to stop that.
Elon Musk posted on Twitter that new Model S owners will receive the enhanced autopilot update in about 3 weeks. Features will be rolled out incrementally on a monthly basis, and Tesla says it wants cars to be capable of full autonomy by the end of 2017. Weren't we saying that we wanted it to be called something different?
Yeah, like they're not going to change the name.
Driving helper.
Yeah.
I like Tesla Driving Helper. I think it rolls off the tongue nicely.
Mr. Musk has dug his feet in on this one. He's not going to change the name. But full autonomy, let's set aside for the moment that you can mean so many different things by saying that. By the end of 2017, could we have anything that anyone by any definition could call full autonomy in a Tesla? That seems unlikely.
I don't think it's really out of the potential. We already have trucks that are driving autonomously. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, on roads,
on highways, on
surface streets.
I mean, this is one of the core principles from my book, but like the technology may be ready, but mm-hmm. we're not going to have regulations in time. We're not going to have, like, the NTSB isn't going to figure out what it wants to do in time. Each one of the states, I mean, there are all these other layers of problems. Plus, the Tesla works okay in highway situations, but to navigate around streets, you need other cars synced up and sort of talking to each other. But every one of the automakers has rolled back its claims of full autonomy. Ford is now saying 2021, right? So this is all well and good, but the whole system has to be able to work together.
Yeah, I would expect by the end of 2017, Tesla will have something they can call full autonomy. Maybe it's, driving on a fairly straight stretch of freeway or something like that. I don't expect them to say, we have a car that you will never have to put your hands on the wheel if you can get regulators to sign off on it. I just don't think we're that close to that. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Big thanks to all the people who keep that place running, too. We have some great mods in there keeping it going. All right. The Signals Are Talking, Why Today's Fringe is Tomorrow's by Amy Webb is your new book coming out December 6th. Before we get into the wider conversation, just tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they pick up the book.
So this is not a book that tells you sci-fi visions of the future. It is a book that tells you how to do what I do. I'm a futurist. And from my point of view, real futurists who do modeling and write scenarios and use evidence and data to try to figure out what's coming next, those tools, I think, should be democratized. I think everybody should be able to do what I can do. And there really isn't anything out there teaching others how to do this. So this book is to take the tools of a futurist and to give them to everybody so that everybody is doing what I do so that we all make better decisions about the future and the present.
I like what you say about the fringe. Today's fringe is tomorrow's future, because that is a principle I've seen happen over and over again, something that a few folks know about in the corner, and maybe a lot, again, sort of like the Amazon Echo, a lot of people go, why would you want that? I remember people saying that about Twitter. Why would you want that? But enough people are enthusiastic about it that you know there's something there. What do you mean by identify the fringe when you say that?
So, futurists who do this professionally, for us, we are looking for signposts, and those signposts are trends. Which I can talk about in a minute, but to get to that point, you know, by the time you read about something in The Verge or Ars Technica, by that point, it's sort of a fully formed idea. And the goal is to find the information so that you can create sort of a map of where we're going, and you have to start out on the fringe. So these are people who are doing early experimentation. It's a lot of pre-publication academic research. It's people in Reddit talking about ideas, some of which sound crazy, but some of which, as crazy as they may sound, will wind up coming into fruition in some way. So you want to capture and sort of survey the landscape there and start identifying patterns in order to figure out what a trend candidate might be. And the fringe is sort of, it's different. You sort of start from a different point every time that you're researching something, but you want to look in places like the Patent and Trademark Office. You want to look at patents to see what people are filing. You want to sort of turn over rocks. And the other important thing is if you're trying to figure out the future of a particular technology, you have to take a really broad look. So if I were trying to figure out what's the future, for example, of CRISPR and genetic editing, I would be looking at the research, but I would also be looking at, for example, China and China's relationship with the United States. I think that biology is our next space race, pitting the US against China, but that involves our political relationships. You would also need to look at agriculture. You would also need to look at what black hat hackers are doing and their relationships with organized crime. So you have to sort of look in these different pockets. And once you create this big map of all these different groups, then you have to observe relationships. So what are all the connections? And that starts to tell you information.
So how do I tell if something is just trendy because everyone's talking about it and something's an actual trend that is gonna stick, that's gonna catch on?
Sure. So in the book, I explain that trends have four characteristics, and the book is all about technology. How do you sort of forecast the future of technology trends? But it is things that fundamentally leverage our human behavior. They tend to fall into sort of 10 sources of modern change. The trends that are worth paying attention to are usually pretty boring. You can't just, there's no catchphrase. For me to explain a trend that we're following, it's like a sentence, they're usually not trendy. So the Uber for X trend that everybody's been talking about for the past couple of years, that is not a trend. That's a bunch of people trying to capitalize on a successful business model, and most of them not doing it well. autonomous driving, autonomous travel is a trend. But here's the interesting thing. That's been around for 100 years. So oftentimes trends will evolve over a slow period of time. They tend not to just materialize overnight.
And you can't really tell the speed a trend is going as much as you can tell that there is a trend, right? Like, is there a point where you can say, okay, this is going to happen sooner than later?
Yeah, well, we do try to track the trajectory. So when, you know, at work, we work with lots of different companies and they want to know how soon is the future? How soon is this technology going to hit? And so you can track these sort of, Gartner does these hype cycles. You can track product adoption and product development, but that has nothing to do with external events that happen. So we were talking about autonomous cars. The technology might be ready for Tesla. The problem is all of the ancillary stuff that happens on the outside. So, regulation that might be coming through, the availability of parts and tools, maybe the each individual state changes its licensure. I mean, there could be any number of things. So you have to calculate both of those things together, which is why, again, there is no answer, right? There is no spoon.
I need to know what company to start. Come on, you have to tell me what direction to go in here.
That's exactly the right attitude. What direction? That I can tell you. I just can't give you because the future isn't linear, right? So I can give you a general direction and we can narrow that down and we can keep narrowing it and keep narrowing it with the expectation that we'll make adjustments. But I can't tell you when exactly the future shows up and what exactly it will look like.
So I work for a bot company. Am I screwed? Please say no.
I have made a couple of AI versions of myself and have deployed them over the past couple of months. And I've baked it. I'm training them in real time. Mm-hmm. And the amount of sexist, disgusting, like horrible, right. It's common.
Oh, yeah. I had to shut down. I had a personal bot as well that I was also training, language training. It did not go well.
Here's what I did with mine. If you start trying to harass the digital version of me, which, by the way, is not gendered, that version of Amy will help you learn how to be a better human being.
That's awesome.
So, but it's also emblematic of something that if you're thinking about the future, right, this is how Microsoft got into problems with AI or with Tay, mm-hmm. right? They weren't thinking through the implications. And that exact same thing was Xiaowei's, which was a chat system that was released in China. You know, they duplicated it and released that in the United States without going through these exact steps that I'm talking about. And that's how you wind up with problems. So anyhow.
That's interesting that you mentioned that because O'Malik wrote a post today in the New Yorker, I think, about the repercussions of optimizing for growth and scale rather than like societal implications. And that's something we're talking a lot about now because of the election, for example, and how Facebook and Twitter, weren't thinking that kind of thing through in terms of, deciding whether to be a platform or whether to be right. a news outlet. So I think we're seeing a lot of, as technology becomes so commonplace and essential to our day-to-day lives, a lot of this is playing out in real time. And it's really fascinating to watch.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I noticed is that a lot of the themes of your book and a lot of the things that you talk about in general play directly to this idea that's been around forever of companies that start out, like Google, as incredibly disruptive and cool, and then reach that point where Google, Facebook, and Amazon are all now, where they start to get stale. And mm-hmm. how do they keep that excitement? How do they keep that forward-looking ability that they had when they were young and small? And I noticed you mentioned BlackBerry at one point, I think in one of the descriptions of the book. Just today, Ottawa gave permission for a BlackBerry-backed project in self-driving cars. So BlackBerry is a great example of not doing it right for years, right? And just kind of stagnating. Is that what do you think of that, I guess, is what I'm wondering, Amy?
I can name just a few companies that have been strong on vision and, loose on details and haven't had to pivot from their original mission. IBM. IBM has always been trying to make computations, right? They've been around for 100 years. Nintendo is a gaming company that's been around for 100 years. There are a handful that are still surviving. It hasn't always been terrific. But, these companies I would put, you know, I would say have not just outlasted changes in technology, but in many ways have helped set the standard for what's to come next. So part of the problem is people have a low threshold for change. We seem to want change all the time, but when confronted with it, we don't know how to handle it. And so it makes, you know, Google now is yesterday's news, right? Even though Google is very much at the forefront of artificial intelligence and, you know, neural network capabilities building. But this is like the boring stuff that most people don't see until it arrives fully formed. And the whole point of all of this, whether you're a person who's interested in tech or a company, is to intercept the process beforehand. So, you know, there are plenty of companies that I think have the ability, you know, without having to pivot 15 different times, right, or burying their heads in the sand and ignoring what's happening. You know, there's a lot of opportunity, again, to forecast and see what's coming and to, in some cases, adjust and adapt. In other cases, be at the forefront of what's happening.
Yeah. You know? I find it really interesting that you use IBM as an example of that because it's perfect. I think of IBM as a company that's pivoted many times, right? They were punch cards and then typewriters and then mainframes and then personal computers and then cloud services. But you pointed out that every time they pivoted, they weren't really pivoting.
Right.
They were changing their approach to the same problem, right?
That's right. And I would even argue not changing the approach, advancing, you know, they have 3,000 researchers just working in the Watson division, and Watson is so much more than a clever Jeopardy trick or like that cool place at South By where you can get food. You know, they are reinventing the infrastructure. But again, I would say that that's something that they've always done. I would say that with Google's got a space elevator project that I don't know whether or not it's still actually being built. You know, they've got VR, they had their AR experiment, you know, but I think all of, you know, for Google, what I see is building this invisible information layer. So if Microsoft, we don't even think about Microsoft anymore. Microsoft is an invisible infrastructure layer without which most of the world would not function, right? We all love to make fun of Microsoft, but the reality is that like half of what, you know, and we all love to make fun of Amazon, but half the world runs on AWS.
Right.
I think that Google is building this invisible information layer, which will, you know, we won't even think about in a couple of years, but will power our everyday lives. And that, if you think about it that way, all of these crazy harebrained projects, including the health project, right? They all have been into that.
Well, maybe they can work harder on supporting multiple accounts on Google Home. That would be great if they could start there. I'd appreciate that.
Please cure cancer, but also multiple accounts on Google
Home. Multiple accounts on Google Home. Thanks.
There's no reason you can't do both. Yeah. All right, let's real quickly get to our pick of the day from Marlon, the guy from Trinidad, who wrote us a couple weeks back that the BBC has released the Android and iOS app Attenborough's Story of Life. Marlon thinks it's fantastic. He says, you get access to over 1,000 clips from David Attenborough's various shows, and in the app, you can assemble the clips to create your own mini documentary. There are Easter eggs of hidden clips of Sir David defined. I got one, funnily enough, after adding a few bird clips into my collection, says Marlon. The only downside is that all the video is streamed, so you should use it on Wi-Fi, and I would have loved Chromecast support, but those minor complaints fade away as soon as you see the beautiful footage and hear that iconic Attenborough voice. Marlon says, highly recommend it.
How fun. That sounds really great.
Yeah. Just be able to have, make it, not only make a little mini documentary out of this wealth of information, but then have David Attenborough's voice on top of it. And the guy just had his 90th birthday and he's still going strong.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Send your picks to us, folks. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. And you can find more picks at dailytechnewsshow.com/picks. Quickly, a reminder for folks in the DC area, the Balto Wash area, this Wednesday, November 30th, a bunch of fans of Daily Tech News Show wanted me to tell you they're getting together in the Washington, DC area. I won't be there, but they will if you want to stop by O'Sullivan's Pub on Washington Boulevard in Arlington, Virginia. We'll have details in the show notes as well. Or you could just go to bit.ly/DCDrinks2016. In fact, Big Jim, who's been putting this together, would like to make sure sure he knows how many people are coming. So if you are planning to go, if you could go there and let him know, bit.ly/DCDrinks2016. Thank you, Amy Webb, for joining us. Again, the book is called The Signals Are Talking, Why Today's Fringe is Tomorrow's Mainstream. It comes out December 6th. Anything else to let folks know about it?
I want everybody to read. It's not like light weekend reading, but if you get through it, you know, you're going to be able to do what I can do and what all these other, you know, again, practicing futurists can do, which can only make all of us better. It will mean that, you know, if I've done my job, the future for you will be boring from now on. And that's the best possible situation you can be in.
Because you'll know everything that's going to happen?
Because you won't be surprised.
You won't be shocked. Yeah. Well, I love that you call it forecasting, because I think that puts you in a better mindset than predictions, where it's like yes or no, right or wrong.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. And you know, I'm not trying to say I'm hedging my bets, but there's a whole scientific sort of explanation around chaos theory and how one change, you know, leads to another and only one thing can happen next. So what this is a comprehensive guide to sort of get you on the path. And once you start doing this, you see the whole world differently and you start making better decisions. So my great hope is in 2017, everybody is using the tools of a futurist.
Go check out the book and also the Future Today Institute at futuretodayinstitute.com. Veronica Belmont, anything to let folks know about before we get out of here?
No, I pre-ordered my copy so I can own all of you at the DTNS prediction show.
Oh, fantastic.
That's my plan.
We should change it to the DTNS forecast.
Also, apparently I'm in some kind of J.J. Abrams, like, lens flare.
Oh,
like,
yeah, you
film
sure are.
Right now for the video user, so
I mean, on purpose, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
yeah.
This is the look I'm going for.
Absolutely. It's a good look. We'll check it out. Wait a minute. Do you have a sword and laser Grobot thing to plug? No, that's just...
Sure, those things. That works.
Yeah, you have both of those things. Sorry, for a second, I read this as swordandlaser.com/grobot.io. Those are two separate URLs.
Those are two separate URLs.
Don't forget, folks, you can support this show with PayPal donations. We have a Cyber Monday sale going on at thedailytechnewsshow.com/store. And mostly we make the show happen because of patreon.com/DTNS. Huge thanks to all our supporters. And all of you, welcome the new patrons as they come on board, including Garrett David, John Moore, and Tyler Cardinal. You guys are the best for making sure that this show can continue. Roger Chang is putting together our holiday specials, and we're going to have one called Underrated Stories. So if you would, this week, think of a story that you thought was really exciting this year, but maybe didn't get enough discussion or kind of went under the radar, and then send it to us, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com with the subject line Underrated. And if you feel like it, you can attach a little, you know, 10, 15 second audio clip explaining why you thought that story was good. Again, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com, subject line Underrated. That is our email address. You are also live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv, and our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
That was great, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good that stuff, Amy. We definitely need to have you back because we could have talked a lot longer.
I would love to come back anytime. I love this. I cannot like believe that I'm actually on the show.
Oh, please.
That's crazy.
I'm honored to have you.
So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
Yeah. I don't know if I explained this. I probably should put this in the email I send to people, but once we're done with the show, I stick around while I edit. Veronica usually has to take off because she's in the middle of her work day. And so if you need to go. If you want to hang around, you're welcome to do that as well.
Okay. I have to go see my child.
Oh, please go see your child.
Take help from school and feed her.
Yeah. Oh, especially if your child is hungry, you should feed.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you again,
Bye.
Amy.
Talk
Bye, to you soon. Everybody. Thank you.
Let's look at titles here.
Yeah, let's pick a title before we go.
What's the future? Find out tomorrow.
Oh, I can't sit like this.
All your subways are belong to us. tracking trend trajectories. Trajectories.
Today's fringe is tomorrow's future. I like that one too.
Cover Alex's ears. Veronica's talking. All good things must trend.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That one's really good too.
Beam me down, Casey. Beam me down.
Beam me and beam me. Beam me down. Makes sense, actually.
Beam me down.
Trend versus trendy.
Bummer.
Which way the trend is blowing? Don't trend all your money in one place.
Don't trend on me.
Yeah, that went to my head. That's not an option. We just made that up.
Yeah, we can
handle the change.
Overrule.
MTA, meh, we're hacked. Trendy X. Rim ain't dead yet. The fringe of the future.
Rim ain't dead. First of all, it's not called Rim anymore. They officially changed their name to BlackBerry several years ago.
There's no future but what we make. All good things must trend is at the top.
I think all good things must trend is my favorite.
I will agree with that.
Motion carried.
Like the ocean.
All good things must trend. I like it.
Wow, Roger triggered the echo even though I was listening on the echo. So we said, Alexa.
Hey, stop it. Don't do it on purpose. Oh. It's mean. People get very angry about it.
They literally left a bad review to the show because
they gave us
that.
A 1-star review on iTunes because of it.
That was a little silly.
Don't do it. I know you're going to do it again.
What?
I can see it in your eyes, Chang. Now we can't think of anything else.
No, I'm just thinking of all the other names that sound just like that, or start with that sound.
Sergeant Muffin said it didn't work that second time.
I'm sure I could use some surplus of adult diapers.
What?
Surplus. So that means
you're reading chat again. Okay.
Sorry.
When you say non sequiturs, I have to just now start to assume that you're reading chat. Oh, Beatmasters, I think he's saying you could order some on his Echo. But then you'll be ordering them on everyone's Echo.
But he says, I'm sure some could use. Oh, some could use. I thought he's saying he could use.
Oh, no, you're right. He says some.
Some could use this, sir.
Yeah, Beef asked the right question. How much longer until these devices can recognize different people's voices? Like, there should definitely be something to stop what happened to Sergeant Muffin, where it's like, oh, that came out of my own speaker. I'm not going to pay attention to that. Shane.
All right, I should probably go.
All right, yes, go back into that dark portal from which you have emerged.
You look like you're in a witness protection program.
Now I'm, oh man, I can't win. Well, yeah, I do look back right now. Yeah. Okay, bye.
All right, bye. Thanks, Veronica.
See ya.
David Attenborough, Sir
David Attenborough to us, I suppose. So we don't have titles in the United States.
Oh, you mean like, aren't those like a royal title?
Yeah, we don't have a royal system.
Isn't that in the inherently classist and therefore to be shunned? Well, no, that's technically not true because we have doctors. Like we doctor so-and-so. We have military.
Well, we have those kind. Yeah, we have occupational titles, but we don't have titles as in, you know, Duke, Queen. We don't have heritable titles. So I guess where I was going with that is, do we then, but when, say, the president of the United States goes to England and meets the Queen, he will say, Your Majesty, and things like that. Does he need to? I mean, would it be, I know it would be considered rude, but we don't have those here. Do we need to respect them? I'm just thinking of this because I'm like, I'm always like, oh, it's Sir David Attenborough. But then I don't know.
I mean, I assume.
Is that rude not to call him that?
It depends on the person, right? I guess if you were in Britain and you were addressing her in a formal capacity, you would talk to her.
According to their rules, yes. But we don't have those rules. I guess we have sort of informal rules like call someone sir.
Sir, ma'am, Ms. Kid. Hey, kid, what are you doing? Like, even after his term finishes, you would still refer to him as President Obama, right? Technically, isn't that how it's done?
Yeah.
You don't say former president.
Correct. Like Secretary Clinton, they were insisting because she was at one point Secretary of State, so you keep that title. But it's not heritable. But it would be, it is considered rude not to refer to a governor as governor so-and-so.
But those are jobs. Well, no, I know they're jobs. I wouldn't ask them. Well, maybe people should come up with their own.
Well, is it still online? The National American Title Board. I started that. Back in the 90s. Look at that. It's still there. Sibrilliant.com/titles. Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution prohibits the individual states from granting titles of nobility. No national agency has filled in this role. America's lack of titular history means two immediate benefits to U.S. title seekers. I did this in 1999.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, sir is not a heritable title, correct? Good point. And Ian?
I'm trying to think of any other system where you would have a hereditary. I mean, emperor isn't even a hereditary title, even though it somehow manifested itself that way in Japan.
Well, yeah. And in Rome. Sometimes, in some portions of Roman history.
It generally wasn't.
It's a title of nobility. I think heritable has less to do with it, because you're right. You can have a title in Rome of emperor, which isn't inherited.
Nobility.
So anyway, I started to grant people titles over the internet, and it was fun until someone actually sent me a check to make them a duke, and then I sent their check back. I was like, oh no, this was all just a joke. If you see that I have a title register up there, that was just... That was just all my friends.
I want to be a duke. Can you be a Duke of Hazzard County? Although sometimes people use the terms like princelings and stuff in a very condescending or dismissive manner.
Sure. Yeah. But then princeling isn't the official title. So that's part of the... Part of the disrespecting.
Send a check. I'll make you a king.
Maybe I should have accepted that check and just started running. I was worried I would get sued as a scam if I actually accepted money.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
Because I was living on the border of legality as far as a business goes, right? Like, this is like naming a star, I guess.
That company
gets sued all the time.
But for what? I mean,
for fraud. For saying they're naming a star, and then people are like, but that's not, NASA doesn't recognize that. And so they have to defend themselves and go, well, yeah, NASA doesn't, but that doesn't mean we don't. We're the National Star Registry.
We all recognize you.
Yeah. We didn't ever say, they're like, we never, they, it's the thing where like they can defend themselves and say, we never promised you NASA would recognize it. Whereas I, especially back then as a impoverished bookstore worker, did not feel like I wanted to defend myself in court, even if I was going to win.
It If random people can print you a college degree, well, someone
that when you say can, yeah, random people can print you a college degree. That doesn't make it legal.
Yeah, I'm still a little miffed that my college diploma was just a sheet of paper in a manila envelope, while the one from my high school was actually bound in that leatherette.
Same for me. It was a leatherette case, like you say, but it was nice. It was smaller, though.
It was smaller, but you know what? It's kind of classy compared to here's a sheet of paper.
Well, you could buy it, right? At the University of Illinois, you could buy the diploma holder, you know, the leatherette holder and all of that if you wanted. But if you didn't pay extra, you just got the manila envelope with the degree in it.
I just want you to pay. Didn't I pay enough for each unit?
Right? That's what I thought. I paid fees all the whole time.
Like the gown and cap fees were more than what I paid in high school for a gown and cap.
Well, that makes sense.
And it's not like I'm physically bigger.
No, but they're higher. They're higher learning gowns. I didn't even get a gown. I skipped my graduation ceremony.
My department had its thing in a different location at the Lowell High School field. It's like, I don't want to stand out there.
Well, the University of Illinois, they have the big one on the football field where they call you up but they basically just name your college and everybody stands. Like, you don't actually get to walk the podium. Then they had smaller ones for the individual colleges that where you'd actually walk across while they said your name. And it just felt like a lot of trouble. I was also in Washington, D.C. instead of in Champaign, and I didn't want to fly back just for that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be kind of annoying.
Oh, now I have it. W. Scotus 1. He posted some links. No cloud DVR at launch for DirecTV Now. Thank you, W. Scotus 1.
I got to cancel my utilities at the end of the week. Oh, I got to get internet this week over there, too.
You only have Spectrum, right, where you're at?
I think AT&T with their fabulous up to 50 megabit per second.
Oh, it's DSL. Up to 50 now?
Well, at least in my area.
That's actually more than I expected to hear you say.
But they charge you roughly the same, so I don't see
why you would ever pay for a slower speed.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're throwing in like a bunch of freebies.
Well, you'll be able to get DirecTV Now, zero rated. Are you going to get cable?
Yeah. I think part of it is because it's just there and it's an easy way to keep everyone happy with programs without necessarily having to fiddle with. Like, one of the biggest things I've noticed, and I noticed this with my parents and my sisters, it's oftentimes hard to find something they want to watch because my parents are so used to just having the TV run in the background kind of thing, and you just kind of just do whatever.
Well, if you did PlayStation View or DirecTV Now or Sling, you have that same experience. You can just turn something on. But it's glitchy sometimes. Like, it's fine for me, but sometimes it's not. It's just not as familiar, I guess.
And my dad has like a Chinese set-top streaming service, so he just watches that most of the time. It's like $40 a month. Not $40, it's a little less. It's like $14 a month. So coax is good if you don't want to go over, what are you limited to? 150 megabits?
No, Spectrum, I think they go up to 300. Maybe not in all neighborhoods, I don't know.
I just wish Giggle Fiber was in my hood.
Daily me first. Yeah.
You would also need to look at
fiber,
Black Hat.
But it only goes up to a half gig.
Is it fiber to the premises or just to the network?
No,
or
it's
to
fiber
the
into the home, yeah.
And my father-in-law had one of those from Verizon, and it was capped at like 27 megabits. It was really slow.
Oh, God, that's ridiculous. No, we had Verizon when we moved in here, and it was capped at 300. That was the highest you could get. But they raised it to 500, and then they sold to Frontier. Frontier's had it for a while now, and Frontier hasn't raised it. Well, Frontier's had it since last spring, I think. Whenever I had to do the show from Allison Sheridan's house, that's how long Frontier's had the fiber here. All right, I think I got everything published, so cool. This was a good show. Can't wait to have Amy Webb back. She was great. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.